909 live, local, original, and eclectic. We like to have a little something of something for everybody. And Thomas Farley joins us now, our friend, Mr. Manners, an etiquette expert and columnist. We're going to talk about navigating your way through today's workplace, the faux pas, the false steps, if you will, the things to, I think that's right, isn't it? Thomas, good morning. How are you?
Tommy, good morning. You know, I love eclectic and original.
Yeah.
I think our conversations have elements of both, for sure.
I think faux pas in French means false step, does it not?
That is correct.
Yeah,
yes,
literally, but it also means a social gaffe. So phone lines are open at 504-260-1870. The first thing I wanted to start with, well, first off, Thomas, tell me a little bit about yourself for people that don't know.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Tommy. So I am a commentator on all aspects of the way we interact with one another on a daily basis. So often people think about etiquette, they think about a show like Bridgerton or Downton Abbey. And, you know, there's a wonderful historical tradition of etiquette and kind of elevated, fussier behavior. But my focus is really on the way we interact with one another in a respectful way. And so I do workshops and keynotes across the throughout North America in workplaces where there are situations brewing and people are looking for somebody to come in and help cool the temperature. And then I have the good fortune of speaking with folks in the media like you and your listeners and viewers around the world as well.
What kind of, and I don't want you to violate any confidences or anything, but for example, what kind of problems, challenges are workplaces facing these days?
You know, I would say what's really fascinating, I work with so many different types of industries, and I have literally, with no exaggeration, worked with Native American Indians, I've worked with coal miners, I've worked with bankers on Wall Street, and I would say the universal theme that when I walk into a corporation or a group and I see that there's a dynamic that's not so great, it really typically boils down to poor communication. And I think there are a lot of reasons why that is going on in our workplaces today, which is simply that post-pandemic, people have lost the ability to interact in a meaningful way face-to-face. And we often were working hybrid. We're not side-by-side with another person in a cubicle. And we're corresponding through email a lot. And that reduces the human connection and elevates the possibility of misunderstanding. So I'd say that's the number one issue that I witness.
We had a vice presidential debate last night. I get text messages on the line from, you know, and I don't think anybody's going to change anybody's mind about anything. Is it best to just, what do you tell your clients, best to just avoid all of that at the workplace?
Sure. Yes. And that's, I think the last word you said there is really crucial. So I'm a big believer that we never come to any understanding of others who have political beliefs that are different from our own, unless we are able to have a civilized conversation. And unless we're able to defend our beliefs on something. So I think it's important not to simply avoid all topics of politics now more than ever. With friends, with people who are family members, who you can do so in a respectful manner, and you've got some ground rules set. In the workplace, though, this is not the location for having those sorts of debates. You perhaps are presuming things about people, and you wind up being incorrect. You inadvertently offend someone, and you've crushed a work relationship or a client relationship. So politics, there are plenty of other things, fortunately, for us to be talking about. In the workplace, politics should not be one of them.
You know, I was reading a story in The Atlantic over the weekend about people, and it was about the people that are defending the January 6th defendants, I guess, and a reporter who was just the opposite, and how they did come to a way of realizing they're not going to change each other's mind, but yet we're able to discuss things. How would you advise people in this election season, if they want to talk politics with somebody, to not, I don't know, what's the first step? I mean, toward either not necessarily reaching common ground, but just listening to people. Take me through this process. If somebody wants to avoid conflict, but yet they hear something they don't like and they want to weigh in on it, is there a way talk about it instead of just avoiding it?
It's a delicate balancing act. I think if you know you're dealing with someone who's simply not going to listen and going to attempt to steamroll everyone with their extreme views, whatever those views might be, I think it is probably best that you shut it down before it escalates. And, you know, there are all sorts of things that you can say to indicate to the other person you are not going to engage. So you might even say something as simple as, you know, that's a really interesting opinion. And then you switch gears and you change the subject to something entirely different. But I advocate for thoughtful, respectful conversations among people you care about and people you trust. Probably not the best thing to be interacting with someone at that level who you've just met and who perhaps you may never see again. I mean, is it really worth the effort and the aggravation and the frustration that will likely result? If someone says something that you find offensive, certainly you do want to speak up and shut down the offensive comment. If someone's being racist, for example, you don't want to simply let that slide. But to get into a protracted debate, this is probably going to devolve into an argument and one that you should not be having.
Let's talk about some of the issues that do arise during a political campaign and again, trying to avoid anything that can get you either into a fight or into trouble. For example, you're at a restaurant, you hear somebody loudly voicing their opinion, making a comment about something you wear, and maybe they wear something that offends you. In this day and age, you just ignore it, look the other way, don't hear it.
I think, you know, again, we've got to really weigh an engagement that we're about to have. Does this person mean something to us? And if this is a stranger and this is a one-off and it's not a continual behavior that's going to be disrupting not just you, but also others in the vicinity, then I really do think you should let it go. On the other hand, if this is, to your example, Tommy, if this is someone in a restaurant who's just loudly barking horrific comments for everyone to see, maybe they're inebriated, I think there you really want to enlist the help of the staff, be it a restaurant staff, if it's someone in a movie theater, you know, a common space, even on an airplane, you're going to enlist the help of the flight attendant. Get a neutral third party to intervene on your behalf rather than engaging yourself. But again, if it's, you know, you're passing somebody on the street and you overhear their conversation and you hear that they make some sort of comment that's offensive to you, I would not engage with that. Let it go. Be the bigger person and know that you're firm in your beliefs and let them think whatever they want to think. You're certainly not going to change the mind of a stranger.
What are some of the other things to avoid when you're in a workplace? Some of the things that people do, maybe they don't realize it. Sometimes I take this mental inventory at night before I fall asleep and I recount the day's actions and I think, wow, you know what? I was just kidding around and maybe I hurt that person's feelings. And I do worry about that throughout my life of maybe I was just kidding around and maybe I said something that affected somebody and they carried it for a long time because I think of things that people said that I carried for a long time. Some of the things that people need to watch out for when they're in a workplace, generally speaking.
Sure. Well, first of all, I love that you're that introspective and knowing you, Tommy, I would imagine that if you do come to the conclusion later on that you've said something that might have been offensive, I'm sure you do have a word with the individual the following day or the next time you see them.
And you know, another rule I have is if I say something to somebody that I offend them, that I think offends them, and I say it in front of other people, I never apologize just to them. I make sure I say it in front of the people that were there when I offended them.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because there may be others who are also, and I'm sure in your case this is not going on, but there may be others who are also offended and they maybe simply aren't speaking up about it.
Well, I just think it's fair. If I say something about somebody and I was wrong about it, then I think it's only fair that I correct it in front of the other people as well.
100%. And that, you know, we're talking about somebody making a misstep in a comment that they make. But I think this also applies to when you've just simply made a mistake in a fact and you're saying something and somebody realizes that what you've said is actually incorrect. I think having the humility and the grace to admit that you were wrong, even if it's simply about a fact and not about an opinion, I think that really shows you to be the bigger person. The key with these apologies is you don't ever make it about the other person simply being too sensitive. So, you know, I'm sorry you took that the wrong way. Now suddenly you're doubly offending the person because you first was the comment. Now you're telling them that they, you know, don't have the correct interpretation of what you were saying. So you always put the apology in such a way that you're putting it back. The blame is squarely with you as the speaker and not on the listener itself. And I think that's really important. We see this a lot with celebrity apologies. You know, well, you know, if my comments were taken out of context, you know, I'm sorry. Well, that's not really much of an apology. And so for all of us regular folks, it's important to make an apology authentic because people can see through an inauthentic one from a mile away.
Why do you think people have such a hard time saying I was wrong?
It's, you know, we've all got egos, and I think it can be very difficult and humbling to admit we're wrong. We see it from the time of being children. You know, Johnny, you know, go tell Sally you're sorry. And no, it's not in our nature. You know, we don't like to admit we're wrong, but I think there's great power in that, and I think. You know, that's something that we certainly don't see very often in politics, bringing up your earlier example. And I think politicians would be wiser and more humble to be able to do that. And I think they'd be certainly a whole lot more likable than many of them are.
Well, maybe your guy doesn't, but mine does. I'm just kidding. I'll tell you what, you know, you talk about powerful, but it is empowering once you are able to say, I was wrong, because it ends it all right there. You don't dig yourself a deeper hole. You don't back yourself into a corner. You just end it right there. There's no cover-up. There's no nothing. It's, you know what? I was wrong. Shouldn't have done it. I'm wrong. And it's over.
And sometimes it's not even over right then and there. Sometimes what then will result is the person you've apologized to is so taken off guard that you're being so humble. Then what you get in return is, oh gosh, no, I know you didn't mean anything. And now it's this kind of back and forth of niceties. Which I think is a wonderful moment for that to happen. I think it really diffuses the situation, and from there you can truly move on.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up when we come back here. If you got any questions, comments for Thomas Farley, Mr. Manners, an etiquette expert and columnist, about office etiquette, gift etiquette. Somebody texted in, is it ever okay to joke around in a workplace? I don't know. We'll see what Thomas thinks when we come back. Your questions again on the Open Heart Jeweler Talk and Text Line 504-260-1870. I've got some of my own when we come back for Thomas Farley, Mr. Manners. I'm Tommy Tucker. This is WWL. 927, Tommy Tucker talking to Mr. Manners, Thomas Farley, about workplace etiquette. Somebody texted in and said, I should not have to apologize for my opinion, even if it offends someone. If you're offended, be offended. But, Thomas, you know, opinions are like... I don't want to name the part of the body, but everybody has one. Some stink more than others. I think sometimes people feel as though they have to force their opinion upon somebody else, or they feel that they have the right to say it out loud or something, that when it can be controversial. Take us through that, please, especially as it relates to the workplace and in interpersonal relationships, family as well.
Absolutely. I think all of these things can be true. I think your listener is right to a degree. You should not have to apologize for an opinion, providing that opinion is, first of all, is it requested? Is it being solicited? Maybe someone is not actually looking for you to share your opinion. You're forcing your opinion on someone who never asked for it, inquired of it. I mean, we're talking about politics here, but, you know, maybe you walk into someone's home and you say, you know, I think that wallpaper is hideous. Well, that's your opinion, and you may feel like you don't have to apologize for it, but you've just offended someone. And I think unless the person says, you know, I'd love your opinion on this wallpaper. I trust your design taste so much. Could you tell me what you think? Well, you know, then you're going to offer your opinion, although perhaps a little bit more nicely than saying something's hideous. So I think there's a spectrum here. When it comes to the workplace, it really, of course, if the opinion is on a workplace idea, you know, what do you think of this proposal? What do you think of this pricing? We're being asked for our honest opinion, and we should offer it. But I also think it's very important that we be diplomatic in the way we deliver information, unless you know that you have the sort of relationship with this colleague or this boss where you really can be a little bit more blunt with one another, and that's what's expected and anticipated. But I think in a situation where you're not quite sure of the best approach, I think diplomacy is going to carry you a lot farther. Even if you feel that you're delivering honesty, you're going to do so diplomatically and respectfully.
You think sometimes people conflate opinions with facts where they think, and I was talking about this earlier this morning, about I think sometimes people get stuck in their echo chambers, and because they interact mostly with people who believe as they do, then they think that their opinion becomes fact and anybody else is wrong.
Well, I wholeheartedly agree with you on that, Tommy. And this is why earlier talking about, you know, should we not talk about politics? I do think it's important to engage not just with people who think identically to the way you do, but to be able to speak with people who think diametrically opposite from the way you do. And I truly believe that it's only in those conversations that you really get to dig a little bit deeper into why other people think the way they do. And frankly, it requires you to be able to defend your positions in a way that is meaningful and substantive, rather than, you know, people are saying, or I've been hearing, or, you know, in my experience. Well, how about hearing from some other folks and having some other experience? And I think that will help inform your future conversations, both with that individual and with others. So the more varied opinions you can gather, the more informed and the better off I think we all will be.
Somebody texted in, they got a text from somebody they work with that apparently was not meant for them, that was very, very awkward and implicated something, somebody was up to something they shouldn't be up to, and they don't know how to handle that. Thoughts?
If you're receiving a text from someone that clearly means you're at least on texting basis with that individual, so they're in your circle to at least some degree, you know, hard to say how close this person might be to you. If this is someone who is a workplace friend, I would absolutely say, you know, hey, John, I don't think this text was meant for me. On the other hand, if this was clearly a mistake and it's someone that you scarcely know, I might just let it be and have the other person save face to the extent that they can, hoping that perhaps you didn't see or understand the text, even though perhaps you fully did.
And they texted back rather than just ignore it.
Yeah, I would say I would ignore it if it's someone that you really don't know well, and it's kind of a random out of the blue text. But if this is your, you know, your workplace buddy, I would absolutely want them to know to be a little bit more careful next time. And frankly, this is probably if this is really potentially damaging information about another person, you probably don't want to be putting that in text at all or in an email, regardless of whether you get the recipient right, because you never know how those, you know, people will screenshot a text and show it to someone else. People will forward an email to someone else. So the moment you put something in writing, it is out there. And whether it goes to the right person or the wrong person, I think you're really taking a risk. So I'd be very careful, especially if this is something gossipy or really negative that you're putting in writing.
Well, and if people, you know, engage in sexting, and I don't, you know, we try to keep this family friendly, but you got to be careful what you're doing there, because if you send it to the wrong person, you could almost potentially be committing a crime.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I don't know that that means you actually get tossed into jail, but certainly you could lose your job or be hauled down to human resources, and understandably so. So, yeah, but really best, you know, if you're going to be whispering sweet nothings, you're probably best off whispering those sweet nothings in someone's ear rather than into your phone and sending it off to points unknown.
Somebody texted in and wants to know about responding to messages that they receive outside of work hours from their boss. The best way to handle that?
You know, I love this question, Tommy. And in fact, it was just this survey that CNBC did a great story about, which was the top five workplace behaviors that are driving people crazy and really making people unhappy in their workplaces. And one of them was being unresponsive to messages. And yes, you know, you send an email, you put a lot of thought and time into it, and you don't get a response at all. Rude, not appropriate, especially if someone you work with or someone who's a client. But on the other hand, if you are sending that email at 11 o'clock p.m. and you're anticipating that you're going to get a response within 10 minutes, this is, I think, highly inappropriate and unfair. And unfortunately, it is very much the way the American workplace. A lot of bosses expect immediate replies and expect us to be connected. We've got our work phone. Well, I sent you an email. You better reply. There are countries, France being one, Australia being another one, where they've actually started clamping down on that you cannot send or respond to a work email after work hours. And I don't know that the U.S. will ever go quite that far. But my window of sending a work email that I'd recommend is 7:30 a.m., the time of the person's time zone, not yours, but theirs, and no later than 6:30 or 7 p.m. That way you give them their family time, their dinner time, their wake-up time, without the interruption. And you might say, well, I turn my notifications off. It's not a big deal. I'm not. But you know what? Let's face it. We all, you know, get up in the middle of the night to get a glass of water. What's the first thing we do? We look at our phones. Do you really need that haunting, that work email haunting you at 2 a.m. because you happen to get up and glance at your phone? So write them if you want. Compose the email at 3 a.m, but don't send it until civilized work hours.
This is interesting from somebody who texts in and said, please ask Thomas to address reply all emails.
Yes, absolutely. Unless this is something that is information that is really vital for the entire group that was on a group thread or even, frankly, group texts, it's becoming increasingly common that, you know, you get an LOL sent on a group text that goes out to everyone. Unless this is truly relevant information for the entire group to know, I would not do so. So in other words, no reply all, simply to say thanks, got it, see you then. This is not necessary.
My rule of thumb is if somebody gets a promotion and it's only appropriate that the boss announce it, I don't reply all congratulating. I look to see either reply to them if I don't see them in person or see them in person and congratulate them rather than reply all.
I think that's a really nice personal touch. And, you know, that gets to another one of my pet peeves of our modern age. We've become so reliant on texting or social media or email to interact with people in a social manner. When was the last time you got a birthday card in the mail or a birthday phone call? The fact that you can go on Facebook and say, you know, HBD with a little, party emoji and call it a day, I think is really sad and unfortunate, especially for people that you consider to be close. So the more in-person interaction, the more in-person congratulations, the better.
Well, there's your quote for today. The entire 4 hours can be summed up with HBD and call it a day. Let me take a break. We're going to pick it up. We come back. I'm going to talk about humor in the workplace because I'm getting some text on that about what's appropriate, what's not. Because, man, this day and age, Thomas, I got to tell you, if it's not work-related, I try to avoid it because I don't see what good can come from that. Thomas Farley, our guest, Mr. Manners, an etiquette expert. And columnist, you got any questions, comments about workplace etiquette, 504-260-1870. Back in a flash, WWL. First, a look at traffic. 9:43, 17 till 10. Interesting hour with Thomas Farley, Mr. Manners, etiquette expert and columnist. Thomas, do you have a website?
I do, Tommy. It is Mr. spelled out hyphen manners.com.
Somebody texted in and said, before we get to humor in a workplace, everything you're saying seems like common sense. Why isn't it? Have we lost our way of just social interaction and just being decent to each other?
We all know and love that saying, common sense, that just isn't so common. The pandemic definitely plays a huge role. We've already talked about that. I think technology, and we've touched on that, has played a role in making us less like human beings and more like robots. I think it's easier to insult when you are doing so from 3,000 miles away over a text or over an email than it is face-to-face. So I think the more we can engage, as we said earlier, in that face-to-face fashion, and if you're not in the same zip code as someone, pick up the phone, have a live conversation. It's this, I send, you read type interaction that really leads to the greatest number of understandings. And I think as social media and certainly artificial intelligence just continue to make their encroach on truly engaging human interaction, it's really important for all of us to hold the line on the importance of kindness, consideration, and thoughtful interactions.
You know, as you say that, years ago, I was in one of these drive-through animal things, that you go through. I think it was in Texas. Mm-hmm. And it was when video cameras were relatively new, and I was videoing a donkey, and its head was in the car. And the person that was with me said, you realize the donkey has its head in the car, right? And I bring that up because I think sometimes we forget that we get so used to looking at things through video or through social media, yeah. we forget that there's actually a donkey's head in the car, if you will.
That's a great analogy. Well, you just go to any concert or any sporting event, and you'll see people doing exactly the same thing. You paid $300 for a good seat somewhere, and what are you looking at? Not the stage, not even the Jumbotron. You're looking at the screen of your phone, looking at the event itself.
Yep.
So I think it's important for all of us to remember to put down those phones and you know, take a breath, enjoy life, and enjoy true conversation.
Somebody texted in, what is the cutoff age for emoji / reaction icons, and is it bad etiquette to sit the trend out?
So, you know, I think they serve a purpose, Tommy. And, you know, again, as we were just saying, it's very difficult when you are not in the same zip code as someone and you're emailing or you're texting to convey the correct emotion. And I think if you're all concerned that your email or your text might sound just a tiny bit flat, or maybe it sounds like you're angry, if you can't rephrase it with your words in such a way as to convey the correct emotion, I think one emoji can be helpful. But I'd also be really wary of inserting too many emojis. If you find yourself inserting two or three or four emojis into a work email, for example, clearly this whole conversation has far more subtext and should be a phone conversation where someone can actually hear your tone of voice. But I'm a fan of emojis. I do think they help smooth the difficulty of remote communication, as long as they're not overdone.
Have you seen this commercial? I think they run it during NFL games about, and it might be a local commercial, I'm not sure, where a woman receives a text that says, and the text says, I'm starting chemo tomorrow. And she's deciding how to respond. And I'm thinking, well, that probably shouldn't be a text conversation, should it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, texting serves a variety of purposes for us. I mean, in that scenario, maybe it was something that she just couldn't bring herself to speak about out loud without getting more emotional, and yet still wanted to, you know, include the person in on that conversation and break that news to them. So, you know, I think certainly any huge news, be it wonderful news or tragic news, much better delivered if we can face-to-face or at least live in a conversation. So, you know, you're getting married, you're having a baby, you're getting divorced. Putting these life events into a text message or an email certainly is impersonal. But I don't know. I think the speed at which communication happens today, sometimes it feels like it's the only way we can get out the information to the greatest number of people.
This is an interesting text, and this has happened to me where people send you something and then you see that they have notification silence. So I don't know if I'm supposed to respond to that or not. What do you do? Does that mean you respond and then they read it when they get a chance, or do you not respond? What are you supposed to do?
The nice thing about, and this is an Apple feature that we're talking about here, where you go and you see that little moon set up. I have mine on right now so that nobody interrupts our conversation while we're on the radio together. So I think certainly if you see that, no harm in responding back. There is, you know, Apple to Apple, there is a way, there's a little button that says notify anyway. That I would advise against, unless this is something really important that you need to get through. But candidly, if it's that important, pick up the phone and call the person. But no, you can certainly reply back, and the individual who has their notifications silenced won't be bothered by it until they actually look at their phone and they turn those notifications back on.
Humor in the workplace. Is anything funny anymore?
Let's hope so. There's a whole lot that's not funny. I think, you know, there certainly are topics that would have been completely commonplace 30 years ago that you would not dare breathe in a workplace today. And I think, you know, in some ways, perhaps that pendulum of seriousness has swung a little bit too far. I think it's important that we be sensitive. I think it's important that you know your audience. Don't presume that what you think is funny is not going to be offensive to someone else. But I think there certainly are topics that should be fair game for all of us, and lightening the mood in the workplace is something I'm very much in favor of.
Somebody texted in about dating and paying, and is it still okay for the man to pay? Is it expected for the man to pay? Should each person pay their own? Who pays if you invite somebody out on a date? Thoughts on that, Thomas?
This is an interesting one, Tommy. It's a real minefield because there was actually a study done last year on this very topic, and despite the fact that in 2024 we're striving towards parity of pay in the workplace and equal opportunity for promotion, that this idea of the male paying for a woman on a date is still holding very strong, and it's an expectation by both sides. Both men feel like it's what they should do, and the women very often feeling like it's what they expect. And a man who doesn't is cheap, and someone who's not going to get a second date. I think it's unfortunate. I think a standard that would be nice for us all to live by is, who did the asking? If you are the woman and you've asked the man out on a date, and you as the woman have selected the restaurant, well, you know, to then just sit quietly with your arms folded when the check arrives, that's certainly not appropriate. So I think both sides should at least offer to pay their fair share until one refuses it enough that you finally put your credit card back in your wallet or your purse. But that, I think, also comes with the expectation of saying, you know, well, I'll get the next one, or I'll get drinks, so that there's some reciprocation, and it's not so one-sided.
Somebody texted in about desk etiquette, about apparently they're having a problem with when somebody's computer goes down, they automatically turn to this person's cubicle, and then when that person comes there, somebody's sitting there, and they're wondering, has there been a coup? Because all of a sudden somebody's at their desk. What's the proper procedure there?
Well, you know, Tommy, this particular problem is an increasing one, but in a slightly different way, perhaps. So as so many companies have gone hybrid, there's this concept, I don't know if you've heard, called hot desking, where you actually don't have a dedicated desk for you each and every day. It's just you come in, you bring in your own laptop, and you plug in wherever there might be a free desk, and that's your desk for the day. So that is increasingly common for companies, especially as they downsize their office space. But to come in and see somebody using your computer without your permission, I'd find that very alarming and completely inappropriate. I would certainly speak with the person about that.
And if you are hot desking, which I think comes from submarines originally, call it hot racking or whatever, where they would one get out the bed and the other one would get in it.
Yes.
You got to clean up after yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. And this was, I referred to that study earlier about the top five workplace behaviors that annoy. That was the number one on the list, was not cleaning up after yourself. And I think it's, yes, at a desk, but definitely in the company kitchen where you're making your coffee or your bagel or your sandwich.
Thank you, Thomas. I appreciate it as always. What's the website again?
Mr. spelled out -manners.com. Thank you, Tommy.
You bet. We'll talk to you again soon. Somebody texted in. I'll let them know to avoid 610 West. Accident being cleaned up. It's a parking lot out there. That's from Hambone. So thank you, Hambone. We'll take a break, find out what Newell Norman's got for us when we come back on WWL.